language was presented to me last week to implement the bonus opportunity to 175. It does not allow the same bonuses to get to 175. Let me try to explain that better because I confused myself. The way you qualify for the 175-foot bonus, it's 100-foot base, a bonus to 75 feet more to get you to 175. You qualify for additional height by first qualifying for FAR bonuses. You get a bonus 1% for the ARC, gives you a bonus. Ecker Roof gives you a bonus. There's a whole menu of desirable attributes that get you FAR bonus. That full menu is not being made available to Riverscape Lot 8 because, unlike every other property in the North Pearl, this site is zoned RX. It's an old anomaly. All the other sites are zoned EX. If this site was zoned EX, we'd have the same menu of bonus opportunities the rest of the waterfront does. The two bonus opportunities that don't apply to our site would be a housing bonus and a bike locker bonus. So the request I'm making is that there's already a friendly amendment for Riverscape Lot 8, which we appreciate and we agree with staff, but we'd like a further amendment to it so that the full range of bonus opportunities that apply along the waterfront would apply to Lot 8. And let me just say that the distinction is, of course, we have this zone that's different than everybody else. And the response I've got is, well, because you have a different zone, it's a different situation for bonuses. I don't think that's what the Planning Commission had in mind. Their understanding was Lot 8 has an opportunity to get a height bonus. There was never a discussion that, well, yes, they have an opportunity for a height bonus, but we're going to limit the menu they can use. I think giving us the full menu is consistent with the Planning Commission. In closing, I would point out there are two key policies for North Pearl. And these are policies the Planning Commission recognized, and I think they inform the request I'm making to you. The first policy says develop a dense and active mixed-use waterfront. So to develop a dense and active mixed-use waterfront, I would say, which includes Lot 8, we would want the full menu of opportunity, full flexibility to try to achieve that goal of a dense and active mixed-use waterfront. And the second policy, which is very specific to Lot 8, says that the commission recommends that the city and the site owner, that would be me, pursue an agreement to develop the eastern half of Lot 8, that's the waterfront half, as a public open space. Hopefully we can do that in the years to come. There's not a development plan yet for this property, so there's opportunities to look at different ways to develop it. But again, the more tools we have in the toolkit as we try to develop the site, try to achieve an active mixed-use development, try to achieve a public amenity, the more opportunity we have. And so if I'm clear on what I'm asking, the request today is you already have a friendly amendment from staff, which I support and appreciate, but to further amend it, and I don't have proposed language, but I'm sure we could work it out, to say regardless of Lot 8 zoning, it can pursue all of the same bonus opportunities the rest of the North Pearl waterfront can pursue.
So, Jeff, in trying to understand what the concern was, the staff must have given you a specific reason beyond what it's zoned at for their concern. What was that?
The concern would be that typically the housing bonus, which is the key bonus that's not available to Lot 8, isn't applied in the RX zone. And that is true. Typically you don't apply the housing bonus in an RX zone. But to me that's a formulaic response. That's sort of this isn't how we normally do it response. It doesn't really go to the planning policy. And the reason I don't think that's a compelling answer is the RX zone is still a mixed-use zone. We just have a certain housing component we have to hit. We have to be at least 60% housing. But the policy goal is, as it applies to Lot 8, be a dense and active mixed-use waterfront. That's the same goal for the rest of the waterfront. Try to develop in a way that's active, dense, mixed-use. So we have the same goal as the rest of the waterfront. And that's why I think the housing bonus should is one important tool to do that. It applies to the rest of the waterfront. I think from a policy standpoint, it can apply to Lot 8. It doesn't set a precedent. I mean, the North Pearl Subdistrict is a unique subdistrict. Lot 8 is a very unique site within the subdistrict. So I don't think you wouldn't be creating a precedent. I don't think you'd have RX property owners all over the city coming in and saying, me too, we should get the housing bonus. I think you'd have a very logical planning response of, no, this is a unique subdistrict on the waterfront.
I'd just like to note for the discussion, staff, be prepared to talk about that.
Jeff, I want to ask you a couple questions. So as I understand it, whether you're zoned RX, but you're zoned RX, and whether you get this change or not, you could still use other bonus opportunities to get to 175 feet, right?
Correct.
So it's not a question of height. You're going to get to 175 feet if you want, using whatever bonuses are available to you. If you wanted to get to 175 feet, you could.
The difficulty in answering that is we don't have a development plan at this point.
I understand.
I can't say for sure that piecing together the different existing bonus opportunities will get us enough FAR to get to 175 feet.
But theoretically, you could still get to 175 feet.
Yes.
Off of RX. It's a harder path.
Yes, it's a harder path. Exactly.
Okay. And you mentioned, so height is not the issue here. It's the question of how you're zoned and then how the rules apply.
So it's our opportunity to achieve. The decision is, from a design standpoint, you should have the opportunity to get to 175 feet. Then you have to use certain tools to get there. So
you mentioned that it was an anomaly that this property, the Riverscape property, is zoned RX. Can you just flesh that out? I mean, I see it's part of the contours of this proposed district. It is a different zoning designation than properties to the south. Do you know why it is RX while other is EX?
This is somewhat anecdotal, but it used to be owned by the port, and sometime in the 90s, the port decided to sell it. It had an industrial zone to be able to sell it. They wanted it out of the industrial designation, and for some reason, RX was chosen. I don't really know if there was much of a conscious thought process 10-plus years ago as to why RX. Certainly the way the Pearl, North Pearl, is developed, it's not the appropriate zone. I think there'd be broad consensus that, well, as evidenced by the guiding policy of an active, dense, mixed-use waterfront, the logical zone to achieve that goal is EX. You can do it through RX. It's just harder because of the vagaries of the code.
One other question. If we, it seems to me, as I've been trying to track this, that there's potentially two ways to get to where you want to be. One is to simply give you the residential bonus. The other is to rezone the property so that you would then be eligible for the bonus. And as I understand it, and I'm learning, there's two ways you could do that. You could apply, or we could weigh in and direct planning to do so. Could you just tell us the relative, from your point of view, what are the relative merits of those different approaches?
Well, in terms of the art of possible, in terms of the process in front of you today, the direct way is simply to make the housing bonus available. That is consistent with the process before you. It's a simple, direct solution. Ideally, in an easier planning world, I think there would be, based on private conversations with the Planning Bureau, I think there'd be broad support for the rezoning, but your process doesn't lend itself to easily rezoning properties. It takes time, money, effort. So am I close to answering your questions, or should I keep babbling on?
I just had, I guess, one clarification I'm trying to get at. Mm-hmm. Are you asking that your property be subject to the new, like, family housing bonuses?
Yes.
And
it already
community
is.
Center?
It already is.
Okay.
Because
that's not the issue here.
That's
what's
not
proposed
the issue.
In this plan. Okay.
Yeah, it's only these two, and the bicycle locker is a little less important than the housing. It's only these two FAR bonus opportunities we don't get that everyone else in the Pearl gets. And just as a safety valve, as another tool in the toolkit, we think it's appropriate to have it.
can't resist since we have a former planning commission chair sitting right next to you. If he's,
I'm not sitting.
If you're allowed to go off the clock and offer your perspective on the issue of giving the bonus versus the rezone.
I really don't want to do that. Okay. I think that would be inappropriate. Fine. I think your staff could answer that as well better than I can.
Okay. Fair enough.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Now, you folks, what's the bonus that you're going to be requesting in terms of the height?
It's 75 feet above the base of the 100, and the proposed language, I don't know if it's been submitted to you yet, is pretty clear in what's required in order to get the 175.
And Mr. Baccarat, you haven't designed your building.
Right.
But once this is changed and those are the two requirements, then you're required then to comply with that as you design your building. Is that correct?
Yes, if I understand your question, right. We'd be in the same situation as Mr. Abel's client.
So what are the reasons that you're requesting the specific criteria? Family housing, what else?
Ours is not connected, if you will, with the issues in some ways that Jeff's bringing up. Ours is much simpler in that this property located south of the Fremont Bridge has a base zone of 100 feet under the proposed plan coming from the Planning Commission. The underlying advisory committee and the design commission were concerned about 100-foot limitations in that particular location being a little short and squatty and causing an urban form that didn't make sense. We approached your staff to talk about that same concern and came up with the idea that, yes, just like the properties north of the bridge, this ought to have, and Jeff's property is already a beneficiary of that, 175, provided that there be some limitations upon the base, if you will, of the building. So this is not an increase in FAR. It's just an increase in height in that particular location. And that's what the proposed amendment shows.
So there's nothing that you're proposing that would add to the value of the total community in terms of additional family housing or?
Well, we'd be to get those bonuses above 75 feet, we'd be subject to those same provisions. I mean, it's in conformance with the rest of the district if this plan is adopted. So to get those bonuses, you would use any number of those things. You could apply the family housing in that situation.
Do you folks have an idea what you're going to be applying for?
There's no current plan that's in process at this point. But again, it sets itself up, and particularly with the extra height, it's more likely that you're going to find a mixed-use type development in that area that would probably be a combination of commercial and housing on those locations. I think the other public benefit, if I can just point out, is still permeability and vision, views through and connection from the main part of the Pearl into the district. It just lets you put more of that FAR up above in the air in a more slender tower rather than on a squat building on, you know, filling out the property.
Thank you, folks.
Okay, thank you.
1 2-second final comment. There is a friendly amendment for Lot 8, as there is for these folks. I would just remind you as you get towards the end of the hearing to remember to kind of carry those friendly amendments forward. So whatever you decide on my site, there is a friendly amendment that's at least halfway there.
So these are the ones labeled potential friendly amendment, I take it.
Yes.
Okay, that's correct.
Staff made it easy. Yeah. Thank you very much for your time.
I want to make sure about that.
Please call the next folks.
The next three are Patricia Gardner, Joan Pendergast, and Rick Michelson. And they'll be followed by John Hirsch, Ed McNamara, and Jim Winkler.
Okay. State your name when you speak, and you have 3 minutes.
Patricia Gardner. I am planning chair of the Pearl District Neighborhood Association, and I'm going to be talking about things I didn't expect to be talking about based upon the last testimony. First off, we've been working on this plan for over 3 years. I mean, one way or the other way, more formally over the past year. And one of the big drivers for it is we have a lot of developers who want more height and more FAR, and the community said, well, great, what are we going to get for it? I mean, if you want more height and FAR, how are we going to stay a community? And so the bonuses that are in this plan are about that. I mean, it's about creating balance between development and community, and sometimes they get out of whack. And the they're very clever bonuses. We're very proud of the bonuses that are in this code. They're very clever, and if they work, I think you're going to see them all over the place. And, you know, the first place you're going to see it is south of Lovejoy. We're going to get this spread throughout because I think they're going to work. They're really going to work. So I guess one thing I want to say, you know, just to get the paperwork out of the way, is we absolutely support this, the what's on the table right now. We urge you to vote for it. In regards to the last testimony, I do need to speak a bit about those items. Because we worked so long together as a community, I mean, Mr. Bachrat has been in every meeting we've been in for the last 14 months, so I'm very familiar with what he's been asking for. I have to go back to what our recommendations were, our original recommendations. Our original recommendation was that the riverfront should be 175. So the Summit property people, that was what we had asked the Planning Commission as a committee to take to the Planning Bureau, to take to the Planning Commission. And so that's in line with what our visions are for the riverfront. It's a little bit more challenging when you go north of the Fremont Bridge. We've always had some issues with Mr. Bachrat's land. He's very persistent. He got the 175 that we didn't want him to get. And the reason why we didn't want him to get is because he's a finger. He's out of context. He's not surrounded by the rest of the Pearl. He's surrounded by a lot of warehouses. And it's a big question for the Central City Plan that needs to be answered is what happens north of the Fremont Bridge. And so I guess I just want to say these two things, the two people came up before you, the two groups, are not the same. And what they're asking for is not the same. And there's some very big issues that are revolving around the Northwest. What's happening at Conway? What's happening north of Fremont? They're going to get studied in the Central City Plan, and I would just recommend let them be studied there.
Patty, I'm going to urge that we give you additional time, Mayor, because I think this is important discussion. Well,
we can cleverly do that without by asking questions.
But I also want to give her a chance to give her prepared testimony.
Be prepared for everybody else. 20
seconds left on what she her time.
I know, but I think we probably could give her another few minutes.
And how much more time do you need?
The only thing is about that. The one thing that isn't going to get talked about a bit is the bonus that's actually very dear to our heart, which is historic structure bonus. That's one that really we're going to use a lot. And it has to do with how do you keep short buildings next to 15, 16-story buildings? How do you balance out a one-story historic building? And I think we've got a tool to actually do that, and I think you're going to see a lot of other historic neighborhoods looking for something similar. So to
demonstrate to Commissioner Fish how we extend one's time, having to do it for everybody, let me ask you a question. I couldn't help but observe that your body language seemed to appear that you didn't agree with what Mr. Bachrat wanted. But when Commissioner Fish was asking questions, it became clearer to me that the height was not an issue, that under either set of circumstances, Mr. Bachrat could achieve 175 feet. So do you understand that, or do you agree
with
that?
No, that's what I understand. I do understand he's got the height that he's wanted.
So it sounds as though the issue is what is comprised within the structure that is at issue, and so do you have issues with that?
Well, I think what he wants is the easy bonus, if I'm going to be just blunt about it.
I understand what that means.
He wants the 2-to-1 residential bonus. He's forced by code to do residential, so he gets to get 2 extra FAR for doing what code tells him to do. Instead of taking the hard path, which is saying, oh, while I'm having to do residential, maybe I'll put some affordable family housing in here and get the extra FAR that I want. And so
that's what he'd have to do under the current set of circumstances.
Correct.
To get to 175 feet.
Correct.
And if we acceded to his request, he wouldn't have to do some of those affordability.
That's correct. He'd get that extra 2 FAR just off the top. And that's what's killed a lot of, you know, just that the residential bonus kills a lot of other bonuses because it's super easy to get.
Yeah. So. Okay, that's helpful. Thank you.
Then I have two questions off of that. We have two friendly amendments before us. One pertains to south of Fremont. One is north of Fremont. Is your position that you support the friendly amendment south of Fremont but not the one north of Fremont?
Correct.
Okay. And then, so I'm glad you used the word easy bonus, because now you're framing it in a way I can understand.
Me too.
What I'm struggling with as I think about this, though, is that what I'm not sure I understand is that if if there we were talking about a different property owner just to the south of his property.
Right.
They would get the benefit of the easy bonus.
Correct.
So help me understand, I mean, if the height is no longer the issue, help me understand why we on the one hand don't have a problem with someone just to the south getting the easy bonus, but Mr. Bachrach not being eligible for it if height is not the issue.
I think that this is the big question, and it has to do with the industrial sanctuary and how we're going north of Fremont. Right now, you know, you've got his area that's kind of more Pearl. Right across NATO, it's a mixed industrial area. That is going to change. And until we kind of like say, where's the line? Where's the line in the sand for the industrial sanctuary? How far is the Pearl going to keep going north? Where is that boundary? Every time, like, if you get a tall building at the end of his property, a big, tall metropolitan Pearl building, it starts to erode the industrial sanctuary. And I think we need to have an opinion about it as a city and say, okay, here's the edge. We kind of lost it once we let everything go north of Fremont. And so as a city, we need to have an opinion about it. It's a conversation we haven't had. And because you don't have that context of everything, the context he's in is Terminal 1 North, which, you know, has all kinds of derricks and, all, you know, is very industrial. And so he is right now 2 blocks wide. His land is 2 blocks wide versus being an entire neighborhood wide. And so I think it seems to me it's not that he's necessarily wrong as he's not in context, whereas somebody who's south of Fremont is absolutely in context, and the city needs to ask the hard questions and figure this out before we just kind of like let it out the door and do it by accident.
Someone, I think Mr. Bachrach raised the question of precedent. In terms of precedent, the fact that we're still operating within the boundaries of the North District plan, Pearl plan, doesn't that give us some assurance that it doesn't bleed into the industrial area?
If you do proceed with him, change his zoning to EX. That is the cleanest way. There's no developer anywhere who's going to be able to say, oh, you get the bonuses because you're EX. I think it's a little bit more messy if you keep it RX. It's not messy at all if it's EX. There's no precedent that's being created. I think you are kind of messing with this idea of RX pretty strongly when you give somebody a residential bonus on top of having to do residential.
I'm getting a crash course in this, so yeah. This is very helpful. But so let me ask you just a follow-up obvious question. If we were either to direct planning or he was to go on his own to seek a zoning change to EX, which would be, the, in your view, the cleaner way to achieve this, would you oppose that?
That's much harder to oppose. I would have a really hard time because right across the street is EX. And so then all of a sudden he's becoming to get in context, and it starts the people across NATO to start having a big conversation about, well, if he's got 175, why don't I? You know what I mean? And so it changes the conversation quite a bit.
So, and I'm not putting words in your mouth, but
so in other words, that, I would
that's
support
more, that's
that.
That's more of the front door way of getting there rather than the back door from
Correct.
Your point of view.
Correct.
Okay, that's helpful.
Well, what does that do to address the context issue you're talking about? I mean, I'm interpreting what you're saying as yes, he can get to 175 feet, but the economics are such as a practical matter he won't. And you want that because then you have kind of a stair step down from the Pearl.
I don't want it. What I want is I want them to look at this really hard in the Central City Plan and say, what is this area north of Fremont becoming? Where's the line between the industrial sanctuary? It's obvious that it's going to grow. It is growing, but it's very sloppy right now. And we need to decide where that boundary is, because what's going to happen is we're just going to keep crawling up and we're going to start engulfing this industrial sanctuary, and it's going to get pretty messy. And
the reason you'd support the EX is it would be a cleaner, defendable line.
Right. There is EX right now. And so then you can at least say we've got a zone of EX. That's the line. No more. No more EX. You know, that kind of thing. But we need to address it straightforward. And what's been happening, it's block by block, it's been changing to EX. Yeah. It's happening through the back door, and that's not how things should
Patty,
work.
One other piece of this. You said it'd be harder to oppose. If you were to oppose it, or if people were to oppose it, would they criticize us for engaging in so-called spot zoning?
I think it's less spot zoning if it becomes EX, because, it starts being in context. I think regarding spot zoning, if you slap a 2-to-1 residential on RX, that's spot zoning to me. Yeah.
You're talking about being north of Fremont. It's like a finger sticking out.
It is.
It's different in either one of those zones. Yeah.
Well, the difference is, and this is why we had opposed the height. Right now, I mean, what I'm going to say, if you change it to EX, I want everything to go to 175. What we've got right now is because everything is built out as far as right now. If you go to his site, it's all townhouses, three stories. He's got a 100-foot building, and now he wants to build a 175. So to me, it's going to be one building and one building only, 6 blocks away from the Fremont Bridge, looking an awful lot like Big Pink, you know, because there's nothing, everything around it is short. And so you need, I guess, this is the question I always ask Gil, what's our skyline? What does our skyline want to be? What are we trying to do? How are we shaping it? And once we cross the Fremont Bridge with a 175-foot building, which is pearl-sized, but what are we doing? And so it just seems like just to have one building versus 10 buildings is creating a funny kind of skyline to me.
Didn't you say that right across NATO it was EX?
It is EX, but it's the height isn't the same. You would know off the top of your head.
It's 75 feet.
It's 75. It's not 175. And so that's going to be the next move is to get that to go up in height, as long as we're playing chess. So, thank you.
I'm Joan Pendergast, and I'm here today to representing the Zimmerman Community Center. I've been a board member on the Zimmerman Community Center for about 9 years, and we've been working real hard to bring the community center to the Pearl River District. And I want you to support the family amenities that goes along with this amendment. I think that you have seen the children here. You've seen how Nancy has organized Central Portland families, and we are getting community. And I think if those of you who have children remember that some of your fondest friends are those that you made when you were raising children. And that's happening with this group. And we want more of that. And we see the bricks and the stones going up in the neighborhood, but we really want people and community, families, groups that are working together. And so I think this amendment would really help. So I'm here to talk about those amenities and hope that you'll pass this.
I just want to echo what you said about the friends you make through your children. My problem is I've reached the age where people think I'm my 4-year-old son's grandfather. So I have to get through that barrier.
Well, you meet a lot of grandparents that way.
What's wrong with that, by the way? Mayor Potter and I would like to know.
Good afternoon. I'm Rick Michelson, a resident of Northwest Portland, just on the other side of the freeway from this district. Mayor Potter and council members, I'm pleased to talk about this project because this is a terrific piece of planning work. I think it's innovative. I think it's creative. I think it does the right thing. And it's almost perfect. However, there's one action item in the list that significantly affects my neighborhood and the area I live in that I'd like to see changed. And that's transportation item 10, which presently says, recommend the couplet concept using Lovejoy from Northwest 16th to Northwest 10th Avenue. And I think that should be changed at this time to say, recommend the street concept making Lovejoy one-way eastbound from Northwest 14th. And the reason for that is it's clear there's a congestion problem on Lovejoy. And it's clear that while you could make some improvements to the signaling timing at 9th to make it better, in the long run, you got to make it one-way eastbound. However, there's nothing there that says making that street one-way eastbound necessarily requires that another street be one-way westbound. The traffic might disperse through it. It might not need that simplistic balance. Most of the transportation information you have looks at the impact of the eastbound traffic and doesn't really consider the impact of the westbound traffic if Northrop becomes another piece of this couplet. In Northwest Portland, we have some traffic issues that are significant from travelers trying to get from the Broadway Bridge to Cornell and from the exit of I-405 on 14th to Cornell. Presently, they use Lovejoy, and we're trying to keep that traffic as much as possible there because that's the District Collector Street. Two changes that I'm proposing in this thing is first of all, I think the one-way portion of Lovejoy should start at 14th and not at 16th, because that would allow traffic that's coming off the freeway heading north on 14th to then make a simple left turn on Lovejoy and go straight up the hill. The second piece emerging at this point is not to make a couplet going the other direction. However, if you do feel you need a couplet for simplicity's sake, Northrop Street's not the right street for it. Northrop Street leads directly through the neighborhood all the way to 25th and Northrop, where it's a faster route for people to travel than it would be going by going back to Lovejoy on the zigzag that people are proposing here. So there are a series of steps. I think the first step is fix Lovejoy, see where the traffic goes, see if you then need a one-way in the other direction, and then look for the appropriate street, which I think is Marshall, not Lovejoy, because it doesn't penetrate the neighborhood in the same way. Thank you.
Rick, have you discussed this with planning?
I discussed the fact that I'd be here testifying about it, but I don't think they've really looked at it.
It is, in any event, framed as a recommend, which is going to require, as I understand it, a whole traffic analysis and PDOT. I mean, so I've just...
This is an early step, and I'm just bringing this to your attention at this point to make sure that the couplet language doesn't become memorialized in our thinking, and then it becomes very hard to do the analysis down the road because everybody's been presuming a couplet. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next three are John Hirsch, Ed McNamara, and Jim Winkler. They'll be followed by Steve Pinger, Tad Savinar, and Camille White.
Please state your name when you speak. You each have 3 minutes. Anybody can begin.
Good afternoon. My name is John Hirsch, Mayor Potter, Commissioners. I'm here to speak as a member of the North of Pearl Task Force and a representative of the Pearl District Planning Group that Patty Gardner chairs. I want to speak in support of what we as a task force did, and I want to particularly underline the exemplary efforts and process that involved the business community, the neighborhood, government, and developers. I entered into this process with great question of whether it would produce changed thinking on anybody's part. And the beauty of what I saw in those 13 months is that people did change positions. Developers changed positions. Planning group changed positions. And what our goal was, of course, is to have quality living in a densely populated urban area. My underlying point here is that delicate balances were reached and negotiated over this long period of time. Transportation was thoroughly considered. The couplet was considered. The changes that were recommended to along the part east of NATO, which were suggested to be amended here, are fine with us except for the Lot 8. My request is that you buy the package as a whole and not cherry pick, because there was give and take, a lot of thought. You can see the innovation that was created through openness. And I would hope that this community process would be respected, and I urge your approval.
My name is Ed McNamara, and I'm also here as a member of the task force for, I thought it was about 18 months, but it was a lot of fun. I want to speak in support of the family housing provisions, and as most of you know, I'm a developer, and I just want to put you at ease right now and let you know I'm not asking for anything. I'm not asking for any changes. I'm happy with it, so you can just listen
today.
Along.
What's that? Today. Yeah.
Today. No, not Randy, you are so cynical for such a young man. It's shocking to me.
Ed, who's in charge here?
Not me.
He's eating up your time, Ed.
Yeah, he is. Sorry, that's right. Well, I'm going to be brief. I think you heard about the these family housing provisions actually sound a little shocking, but really they're just building on the trends that are happening. You heard about the birth rate. If you've been around that neighborhood, you know, and a lot of you know, Nancy and Kirsten and Central City Families have really been building this tremendous organization. They've got kids' play spaces. They got Isabel Clubhouse. Zimmerman Community Center has been working on this. Ben Gates and Central City Concern have been doing a lot of work. You're finding PDC did a great study on the market for family housing a couple of years ago that was useful information for everyone. The businesses are moving in. The Sipping Crayons Coffee House on Jameson Square, Jameson Park, is filled with kids. There's a toy store over there on the other side of the park. There's a children's clothing store. So the businesses start to realize that that market's changing. So we're not imposing radical change in this community with these family provisions. We're recognizing the trends that are already happening. We're reinforcing them, and by doing that, we're advancing them. What you're really doing, I think, is taking the city's goals to support a whole community, and you're making the city policy get aligned with those goals, and it's a great move. I want to mention briefly my project. I think you heard a little bit about it today. I've talked to some of you about it. We're looking at 135 units of family housing right up the street from the Sitka. It's going to be a great building. We're going to have large play spaces outdoor. We're going to have community rooms on every floor. We're going to have a large community room on the ground floor. Someday hope to Laura Zimmerman Community Center up there to the north end of the Pearl. We're designing this community room so it can be open at night for the neighborhood as well as daytime for the residents. We are looking for daycare for the ground floor. We've blocked out space for that. We're committed to finding that. And I think that's I've talked a lot to the county and to Portland Public Schools. And we're blocking out a space, some of you know this, for three classrooms for Portland Public Schools on the ground floor that they would lease. So no capital cost, catered to start to capture those kids that are being born there. And there's nothing signed yet, but we started this conversation over a year ago with them, and we're progressing pretty far. So I'm really excited about the possibility. I think it's going to happen. And as they talk about it more, they're concerned isn't will it succeed. Their concern is what's going to happen when there's too much demand for it. How will we expand it? So it's a great project. It doesn't need these provisions because I started it so much earlier. It's going to succeed without them. But I think what will happen is that my project's going to be so successful.
My skeptical impertinence delayed your time, so go ahead.
Right, thank you. There are a couple blog mentions. I've already had three phone calls from people wanting to know if they can, you know, sign up for the unit that's going to be ready 2.5 years from now. So there's a lot of interest in this. I think this will be so wildly successful that it's going to convince the other developers in Hoyt Street, in the industrial area, in Conway, that they should take advantage of these new family housing provisions because we've shown with this Pearl family housing we're doing that there'll be a market for it in demand. So I just encourage your support of them and your adoption of the plan. Thank you.
I'm just curious, Ed. So the features that you're talking about, are they as a result of these changes that we're contemplating in this plan today, or were you doing that notwithstanding?
No, the latter, Randy. I've actually been working on a concept like this for about 2.5 years. I've continued to fine-tune it, and it almost looks like the plan was written for this or my project was designed around it. But I think it's because I've seen the same trends that the neighborhood and the planning district saw, that we have that convergence of my project and those policy goals.
So would this have the ability for you to enhance the development that you were contemplating before this? I mean, or is it just affirming what you're already doing?
I think it's really affirming what I'm already doing. The other part of the project, there was something in the plan about the diversity of housing choices, and we're also going to convert this to a co-op in 15 years. So the low and moderate income tenants will be the shareholders of a corporation that owns it. And it will continue to be affordable for 60 years, but all the cash flow and all the tax benefits will go directly to the tenants instead of to a private owner or to a nonprofit owner. So it's also meeting some of those diverse housing choices goals.
Communism in the Pearl?
It's kind of sort of like that.
Oh. Ed, yeah. Ed, is there, does your financing contemplate some public contribution?
Yes. PDC has been working on this and has provided a pre-development loan for it, maybe not enough, but some, and they've been working on it in their budget. It's things are expensive now. Land's expensive, but it's actually going to need about the same amount of money that PDC invested in the senior housing project 5 or 6 years ago, which was a much smaller project. So by comparison, it's a bargain.
And so let me ask you, if the appeal of the River District amendments drags on for up to 2 years, so that PDC puts a hold on who gets what in the short term, does that effectively kill your project?
Well, I'm meeting again with PDC. I was supposed to meet this week. We got rescheduled to next week, so I'll find out a little more about that.
It doesn't help your project to have that uncertain, the cloud over the overall PDC funding as a consequence of the appeal.
I think it's safe to say it doesn't help it. This is in their original boundaries, so it's not in any of the expanded areas. I think it would be the expanded debt limit that might be put it in competition with other projects, and I think you and PDC will decide, you know, what are the top priorities. And, I really can't make those decisions, what comes first if there's limited funds. So if there is, you know, if the funds are reduced in any way and there's more worthy projects out there competing, then wiser people than me will have to decide among them. And it may be that this gets delayed. The danger with this being delayed is it's one of the great things about this site is it's one of the last sites, undeveloped sites in the census tract that allows for 130% boost on the tax credits, which means about $3 million less of PDC money needs to go into it than if it were on one block away.
Well, there's another...
And that could change in the 2010 census.
There's another danger that you're too polite to mention, but we also have at the Resource Access Center, which is the cost of construction are going up every year, a factor of about 10% or whatever. So it's going to become more expensive the more we delay this.
That's a real danger, yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm Jim Winkler, managing member of One Waterfront Place, LLC. I'm in the audience with me is my partner, Bob Nato. There's much about this plan that we admire and wish to see implemented. However, as unlike John and Ed, we weren't invited to the party, and at no point were engaged in this public process. And in some respects, we feel as though our absence contributed to having our ox gored. The original recommendation of the task force was uniform treatment of 4-to-1 FAR for all of the parties. Subsequently, we were advised that the NATO parcels would in effect become subservient parcels and would remain at 2-to-1, although our property is 2-to-1 on the portion we own and 4-to-1 and 2-to-1 on the portion we're acquiring from PDC. We thought this strange because we had done a very detailed traffic analysis of NATO Parkway, which showed that traffic had actually declined significantly over the last 7 years. We shared this with planning, and we engaged Kittleson to do a far more detailed analysis. We went through a series of meetings in which we were given four different justifications of why our property would be treated differently from the others. But we found in the traffic analysis being presented that it was based on very gross tools, a regional transportation analysis, kind of macro study, sort of like flying over Portland in an airplane and making a land use to study as opposed to in-field testing. This is a far less precise way of doing transportation analysis than what would be required of an individual who sought a zone change. On the basis of that, we believe that the transportation analysis is flawed and that there is far greater capacity along NATO Parkway. And I could talk a lot about this process or what was characterized as sequential revelation or a hinky process by planning senior staff, but I think that what I'd like to suggest to you is that we would like you to direct planning to talk to us about a friendly amendment, which would involve some sort of compromise so that this very meritorious planning scheme can go forward without further acrimony. The kind of amendment we'd like to have would be some sort of FAR increase along our own site, and in future periods, hope that all properties would be treated essentially equally unless there was a significant reason to do otherwise. In the future, I'd love to see properties rezoned in accordance with a much more sophisticated traffic analysis rather than a very gross tool. I'd also like to make a brief comment about urban form. We're developers of office buildings, and office buildings do not fare well in point towers. And although the aesthetics of a point tower can be compelling, its environmental performance is generally inferior, and from an office point of view, the floor plate isn't very acceptable. So it is tantamount, in effect, to saying that beneath a certain height, we'll have offices, and above them, it's highly improbable. Thank you.
So, Jim, you said you weren't part of the process. Were you not aware of the process that was occurring?
We were.
And why didn't you participate?
Well, we weren't asked to participate. We had an architect who was on the task force, and so we received periodic briefings.
How was that you not participating then?
Pardon me?
If you had an architect on the task force, how was that?
Well, the architect represents a number of people and represents us in some matters. So we heard briefings of how the process was going. But had we been a member of the task force, the decision of the task force was subsequently modified by a decision of planning to treat the NATO properties differently than the others.
Did the task force take comments during the process?
About the NATO properties?
About any properties, about anything from anyone.
Oh, I'm sure they did.
Why didn't you go and participate with that?
That's a question I've asked myself, Randy. I thought that all the properties were being treated similarly. The input we received from our architect is there was no reason to go. Things were going well. We had a similar input from conversations with other people. Didn't realize there was an issue until after it was announced.
Was it at the Planning Commission that the change was made?
No, I think, well, we heard about it, and then we spoke with planning staff, with Troy and Joe and the head of planning. But the surprise to us is that we didn't think, based on our much greater understanding of the traffic and based on the studies that we'd had prepared, that there was any reason to suspect that there was a traffic constraint along NATO. And in effect, I still believe, based on our studies, that there is significant remaining capacity in the year 2030. And the transportation draft study that was, I think, sent out last Thursday, the 18th, talks about looking at this again in the Central Portland plan. And I look at this and think 6 months ago we had this conversation. We certainly could have done an in-depth study. We haven't.
So maybe I missed this part, but it's, if not important to anybody else, it's important to me. So at what point in the process did the traffic analysis become of concern to you?
When the traffic analysis became a concern, it wasn't done at, I believe, any time during the task force. It was post-task force.
It was underway but not completed until after the last meeting.
After the last meeting of the task force.
And however, many people came to our meetings, both at the time of the task force and subsequent to the task force, there were public meetings. People who were not on the committee came to the committee.
What would you call that, those public meetings? Who headed those up?
The planning group.
The planning group.
Mm-hmm.
So during that process, was this traffic analysis done and available for comment?
You'd have to ask them.
I don't believe so, to my knowledge, but they would certainly know.
So you're saying that you'd had no opportunity to ever respond to that? There was no representative or notice to you? And so when was the first time that you became aware of that? At what forum were you allowed then to speak to the traffic analysis?
Well, when we first became aware of the traffic analysis, I telephoned Troy to discuss the matter and asked to have a meeting with Gill. We had such a meeting with Gill. Later, we had a meeting with Maurizio, I believe. He may have been in the same meeting.
I was more thinking about a public.
Public input on this.
There wasn't. Okay.
And we went to the extraordinary measure of hiring our own traffic analysis, our traffic engineer, and making the information available because we wanted to be part of the record. From what I understand of that, that was not incorporated into the thinking of planning.
Okay, so I want to follow up on this too.
Jim, I just have a few, I want to nail down a few details if I could. You have currently an approved design review?
We do.
Okay. And where are, and I understand you've taken some action on your LEED Platinum project.
It is a pre-certified LEED Platinum project. The first in the country, I believe.
And have you used all the FAR bonuses currently available to you?
I believe we have. We've used all that we have. We may even have unused FAR. I think this is more to me a matter of principle and a process than of the specific outcome of One Waterfront. Now, if for some reason in a conversation with the tenant we would desire to augment the scale of One Waterfront, it would be helpful to have more FAR. And it would be desirable for other reasons. But it is the idea that certain parcels would be subservient, notwithstanding traffic analysis, that indicates that that shouldn't be the case, that is distressing.
So at least it's possible that you would continue with the current design for your building, even if you got the relief you were seeking?
Absolutely. In fact, it's the likely outcome.
I appreciate that because that causes me to ask this question. So what is the potential difference between what it is you can currently do with all of the FAR and the bonuses and what you could do if the traffic analysis you had conducted was accepted?
Well, if the traffic analysis was conducted and we didn't go do the scheme that's been designed, millions of dollars have been invested in, then we would develop, I think, a taller tower.
You could develop a taller tower?
Yes, a taller, larger
What's
tower.
What's the difference?
Three or
four floors. The implication of what you're asking us to do is three or four stories?
Well, I wasn't thinking about it specifically for our project. It was more the process that concerned me and why a particular series of parcels would be treated differently than the others absent a colorable justification, which I don't think is present in the traffic study. But in our case, if we had more FAR, if we were starting today, we would design perhaps a different project. And if for some reason our scheme were to evaporate, we might design a slightly different project. Perhaps it would incorporate a residential aspect. Perhaps it would the site is fairly large. Perhaps it would be twin towers. There are a number of modifications, but I was mainly concerned about the practice and the fairness and whether or not this was truly a transparent process, whether it was one in which people were totally forthcoming or whether or not it had the appearance of transparency and that there was something that I just couldn't fathom going on. I was extremely uncomfortable with the fact that the traffic information that would be required from me as a developer was materially less than that which is required for a significant legislative rezone.
For significantly what?
Legislative rezone, in effect. I like the plan overall, except as it affects us. And I would like to see, in the interest of fairness and creating an appropriate precedent, a friendly amendment which would allow us to resolve this matter appropriately.
Mr. Winkler, are you saying that yours is 2-1, the other properties are 4-1, and that's what you would want too?
I would think on our site, the building site, yes, we would like it to be 4-1. That would change the FAR by about 114,000 square feet in this area. And if you look at the map, Mr. Mayor, I think you'll find that part of our site is 4-1, going to the middle of the Broadway Bridge, and then it's 2-1 north of the Broadway Bridge. If you look west of the railroad tracks, it's 4-1. And if you look at most of the properties, it's 4-1. We had expected it to be 4-1. That had been the reports that we were getting from the architect who represents our firm and several others who was on the task force. And we were quite chagrined by the unexpected change.
Further questions? Thank you, folks.
Thank you.
How many more folks do we have?
We have about 5 more people.
Please call the next 3.
That's Steve Pinger, Ted Savinar, and Camille White. And they'll be followed by Abra Hartley, and I believe it's Anjali Rather and Kabir.
Please state your name when you speak, folks. You each have 3 minutes. Anybody can start.
I'm going to precede Steve because I've got a car across the street that's in a 4 o'clock zone that will be towed in approximately a minute. So,
hurry.
Thank you.
Better go.
Tad Savnar, P.O. Box 10798, Portland 97296. I was a member of the CAC, the Citizens Advisory Council on this project, as well as a property owner who owns some property adjacent to the study area. I just wanted to say that really all I want to talk about is process. It was an incredible process. Anytime you gather citizens and developers together to talk about view corridors and sunlight, mobility and noise, market viability and civic pride, and kind of factor that in with present aspirations, past successes, and a hunch about what the future might be in a city, it's a complex organization of considerations. Our first meetings were tense and somewhat posturing, but by the end we were a collaborative family moving through the issues, making decisions together. This was not a process based on winning or losing or compromise, but rather it was a process founded in common sense, cooperation, and true collaboration. And the reason really for me was the way the staff handled the meetings and the participants provided an opportunity for anybody at the table to speak. Everyone was heard. Over and over again, schedules were shifted, documentation was engaged in, investigation was engaged in. Whatever this CAC requested, staff was there to pursue those considerations to really make a great plan. I just have to say that in my professional life, I go and do some of this same kind of work in other communities. You have no idea how lucky we are about how the process works in Portland. I've seen public meetings where people boo for 2 hours. I've seen meetings where 4 people made a decision about 20 miles of light rail through an entire city without any kind of planning or public involvement. So we really are fortunate to have this process. But this specific study was really the cream of the crop. And I really want to compliment the staff and make sure you're aware it was really a true, transparent, wonderful process. Thank you very much. I'm going to move my car.
Thank you.
My name is Steve Pinger. I'm a Northwest Portland resident. I'm on the Northwest District Association board.
and I'm a former chair of the Pearl District Planning Association. I'm here representing the Northwest District Association, and we'll read essentially from a prepared statement. We, too, believe that the plan is almost perfect, but we have a couple of comments. The Northwest District Association borders the North Pearl District study area to the west. The former Terminal 1 portion of the study area, however, is within the Northwest District Association boundaries. We have therefore reviewed the proposed North Pearl District Plan for consistency with the adopted Northwest District Plan. NWDA has submitted written testimony to the Planning Commission during its earlier hearings on the proposed plan. We wish to reiterate today NWDA's position both as a neighbor and a stakeholder. The NWDA strongly supports the goals and objectives of the North Pearl District Plan. We support its adoption by council, but we have requested the following three conditions be required of the adopted plan. First, at the Terminal 1 Riverscape site, the creation of the height opportunity area on the furthest northwestern parcel is inconsistent with the objectives of the adopted Northwest District Plan and should be referred to the current Central Portland Plan process or withdrawn so that the height opportunity area applies only to the parcel directly adjacent to the Fremont Bridgehead. Secondly, the granting of additional allowable height at Terminal 1 through the creation of a height opportunity area has been proposed with an understanding of a concurrent public benefit deriving from the provision of an area to be allocated for a public park at the termination of the Greenway frontage by the developer. To date, there has been no indication of the mechanism for the design, funding, or development of such a park. The creation of this height opportunity area needs to be conditioned to the identification of these mechanisms. Third and lastly, the proposed North Pearl District Plan's provision of increased densities relies heavily on a transportation analysis that depends on what appear to be extremely hopeful mode splits. NWDA, as a neighbor likely to be impacted, believes that the adoption of this plan needs to be conditioned by the independent verification of the underlying assumptions of its transportation, that the underlying assumptions of its transportation analysis are credible. Thank you.
My name is Camille Light. I live at 920 Northwest Kearney in the Pearl Court, which is a federal housing authority. And I'm here to speak to the needs of the families in the Pearl District that have any financial restrictions. We ourselves live in 478 square feet, the three of us, my husband and I and my son. We live on less than $40,000 a year, and we make do with what we have. The Pearl District is super important to us because we can ride the trains everywhere we go or the streetcar. The people that live there are fantastic. We spend a great deal of time on the beach sort of talking to our neighbors. And to get an understanding of the type of people that live down there, it's so mixed, and we all have different needs. I, for instance, would like to have daycare, so maybe a community center that we could go to. It would be really nice to have a school that we could stay in the neighborhood. Many of my friends have had to leave the neighborhood because of no school. That's besides Chapman, where we don't have to be in the lottery system. It gives an opportunity, I think, for us to stay. Many of us have had to leave because the lack of school and daycare facilities. We would like to encourage you to vote quickly on this matter. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much.
Can I just ask you one question? Did you say that you have to be in a lottery system for Chapman?
That's correct.
Aren't you in its natural boundaries?
No.
You're not.
Okay. No, we would have to be apply. We would apply for. The, we would be, sorry, sorry, nurse. We would have to be a part of the lottery in order to get in, unless we moved closer northwest, closer to it northwest.
Chapman included your area, but
so what is the natural boundary you're in? No, for some reason we fall out of that boundary. Myself and my neighbors would be
part of it. I'm asking which, what is the school, the boundary?
I don't know the answer to that.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming down.